7:38, Bill Flores joins us from D.C. Good morning, Bill.
Howdy, Scott. Great to be with you on News Talk 1620.
Well, let's talk about Eric Cantor first. Your thoughts there?
Well, that was a surprise to a lot of folks around the country, including several of us up here. I think the postmortem is yet to be written, but I think when you look at it, there will be a few things that come out. One is, when you become a member of leadership in the House, you wind up running all over the country to help other candidates get elected or to raise money or to recruit new candidates to run against incumbents. And as a result, sometimes you pay less attention to the folks back home in your district, and they're the ones that elect you, not the national audience. And so my suspicion is he might have been away from the district a little bit too long. I don't know that for certain, but I think that's one of the challenges you deal with. The other thing is some of the folks back in his district were upset with him because of the way that they dealt with their convention. They used something called slates to control who was on the ballot and so forth. And I'm not sure how that works, but I think some folks were agitated about that. And then a lot of national media talk show hosts got involved in that race over the last couple of weeks. And I think it had an impact on what the voters were thinking there. Next, I think that is, maybe his polling was a little stale. The last polling that he saw, and I think many people saw, showed that he was leading 62 to 28 or something like that.
Yeah, that was not good information.
No, it wasn't. I mean, supposedly he was about 36 points up, and something went haywire there. So either the polling got stale or it wasn't very accurate. You know, the last thing I'd say about Eric is he's really a good conservative guy. I mean, he's not one of the so-called rhino-type folks. He is very conservative. He may have gotten a little too far out in front of the skis on immigration, particularly with respect to how to deal with the Dreamers. But, other than that, he's a very conservative guy. So I was kind of surprised. But anyway, we'll have a new freshman. Mr. Bratt will be joining us as a freshman next January. And I'll look forward to serving with him.
And that may shake up leadership also, because obviously, though quietly, he had to be thinking about maybe stepping in to Boehner's spot.
Yeah, I think he was always thinking about what he would do when John Boehner retires as Speaker, and I think that was where he was planning on going. I'll tell you what, I've already gotten two calls and a couple of text messages, some as late as midnight last night, saying, hey, would you support me for this position or that position or that position? The jockeying has already started for new majority leader, and then if the whip moves up, then you got people jockeying for whip. And interesting times. It was an unexpected event.
You know, one of the things we've talked about on the show the last couple of days, you mentioned Dreamers just a minute ago with relation to Representative Cantor, and this whole thing where young children are being moved sometimes from where they've crossed the border into Texas out to Nogales, Arizona. This puts a whole new light on the idea of illegals in America, because these aren't grown-ups, these aren't lawbreakers from the standpoint that they maybe have broken a law in a foreign country. These are young children.
Right.
What do we do to take care of them, and is this somewhat of a plan to try to be able to allow these children to be able to stay in the States?
I don't know what the plan is for how to deal with these children, but I'll tell you what we got right now is a direct reaction to the president not following the law. The law says that you will be deported if we catch you, and certain things happen. And so, if you know, he's got this, he's decided to defer prosecution and adjudication of the Dreamers. And until the law says that he can do that or comes up with a different plan for the Dreamers, he's supposed to follow the law. And so you've got this big rush of folks to come across the border in order to try to be part of that group that thinks that the president's going to gain citizenship somehow. So,
but tell me what election.
I mean, this is a result of the president's just failure to pay attention.
But what elected official would say, send that 6-year-old back to Honduras? I mean,
well, that's the issue. I mean, what do you do now? I'm telling you, I don't have a good answer either. This is a human tragedy that the president caused, and I don't know exactly how we deal with it. And I'm going to try. I'm meeting with some of my colleagues today at lunch in the Republican Study Committee, and we're going to try to figure out what are the next steps. I know this issue is upon us. How do you deal with it? I'm not sure.
Bill Flores joining us from D.C. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel going to be talking today to the House Armed Services Committee about this Bergdahl thing. Your thoughts there?
Well, if it's anything like the supposed classified briefing that we got from the administration on Monday, it's going to be a goat roping. We were invited to a classified briefing by the administration to talk about Afghanistan. Well, it turned out to be essentially a press conference about the Bergdahl deal. There was one piece of classified information in it, and the rest of it was stuff that had been part of their talking points that they put it out. One of the new pieces of information we learned was that there were about 80 to 90 people inside the administration that knew about this deal. And apparently they could all be trusted, but Congress couldn't be trusted. They were trying to find a way to say that they had informed Congress about this deal, and as we continued to press them during the Q&A, it was obvious that they had not. And my expectation is that Hagel will be pretty well criticized. There's a great letter from Sam Johnson, who was a POW during the Vietnam War, who is a current Texas congressman. I'm going to put that on our website today, because I think Sam has better than anybody else talked about the dangers of this stupid deal that the administration did when they entered into this prisoner swap in terms of negotiating with Paris. It puts a bounty on every American's head around the world, essentially, with respect to the Taliban and Al-Qaeda.
Understand that. Bill Flores joining us from D.C. this morning. I know that the Highway Trust Fund is something that's going to be center court this week. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the Highway Trust Fund is going to run out of money sometime in the next month or two, because of declining gasoline taxes and continuing high levels of expenditure. As a result, the states have a lot of projects ongoing that they're probably going to shut down in the middle of the projects. And so we come up with a patch to temporarily fund the shortfall of the Highway Trust Fund, which is about $12 billion between now and next May. That should get us to the point where we can start looking at what the long-term solution is for building our highways. In my view, this is something best left to the states, and we ought to involve the federal government's involvement and move it back to the states. That's not practical between now and a few weeks when the Highway Trust Fund runs out of money. And so this patch, if you will, gets us some time to come up with a longer-term solution, conservative solution based on constitutional principles.
You know, we've got a story this morning. AAA says that two-thirds of Americans, 68%, believe the federal government should invest more than it does in roads, and 51% says they would pay more in taxes for federal taxes in highways. Is that something that makes sense to you? Is that something that you would support?
I don't think the gas tax is a solution. I think that, I think we're going to have to pay more. The issue is how do you best apply the cost of building the roads to the people who use them? And how do you best determine how that money's spent? Right now, the gas tax, or up until a couple of years ago, the gas tax was used for everything from beautification projects to bike paths to parks to mass transit to rail. We've skinnied all that down over the last couple of years. But we've got to get back to sort of the basics of who's responsible. In my view, the states are responsible, and then B, how do you pay for it? It may wind up being some sort of a user fee, but you got to do it where you're not doing it through any kind of GPS monitoring or anything like that, because you don't want it. The federal government's already shown it invade your privacy, and so you need to make sure that the federal government cannot do that. Because there's
no, we don't want one more place for that to happen.
Exactly. I'm with you on that, and so we're going to have to come up some. The gas tax doesn't work because you've got some users that are not paying anything. I mean, for instance, if you've got an electric car or a natural gas powered car, you're paying nothing for the roads. If you're a hybrid, you're paying very little for it, but you're still using it. And so we've got to find a different way, so that, you're paying based on the road that you're using. But again, I think this is probably best left to the states. We're going to have to push all of it back to the states.
You were part of the official party that went to the D-Day ceremony in Europe. Kind of like to get your observations there.
Well, I can say this. It was very moving, and it was humbling to see what happened 70 years ago last Friday when Americans, Canadians, Brits, and France, and some other countries came ashore. I mean, what they did is truly remarkable to not only for our country's future, but for the future of the world. And it was very moving. There were two ceremonies that we attended as part of the, actually three. We had a French-American ceremony in the morning of D-Day. We had an international ceremony in the afternoon of D-Day. And then the next day, we had a wreath-laying ceremony at the U.S. cemetery just outside of Paris.
Well, again, certainly a memorable time. That's without a doubt.
Yeah, there's probably not very many of these veterans that are going to be around for future events like this. So I was glad that we got to. There were about 90 American veterans there, and it was just truly humbling to be around these heroes.
Bill Flores joins us most every Wednesday. You can hear the interviews archived on our website at WTAW.com. Thanks for the time this morning.
Forever vets and veterans.
All right, will do. Take care. Thank you.